So the title of the talk tonight is You Are the Eyes of the World. You are the eyes of the world. And if you think about that for a minute, that's an impossible and really mind-blowing statement to make. Are we a person? Are we just the eyes of the world looking at the world? From a logical point of view, a statement like this makes no sense. And more than that, it tends to just turn the brain around. And it represents a kind of knowing which is not about me and the world, which is not dualistic. From the wisdom point of view, it makes a lot of sense. You are the eyes of the world. Makes complete sense. From the wisdom point of view. So in this practice, and in actually the spiritual life, it really doesn't matter whether you're practicing Dharma or you're practicing any authentic spiritual journey which really involves transformation and not just thinking about it or reading books about it, but is genuine and deep, there will always be the same journey, which is from the dualistic knowing, me and the world, what I need, what I think, my view is reality, to the non-dual or wisdom kind of knowing. And it's exactly what we're doing here. And it's not easy, because we've been growing a kind of thinking brain for all our life, and all of a sudden we want to blow it to pieces and see the world in a totally different way. I'll give you some examples of the two kinds of knowing, just things that have come up here in the retreat. I have a critical mind. My mind is critical of myself. I'm no good. I don't think I can do this. I've always been critical of myself and of other people. Dualistic knowing, giving your thoughts reality, truth. I am a. Non-dual, or the more wisdom knowing, would say it's just one of endless possible narratives that are passing through the consciousness. It's just a view. It has no reality other than itself, than it's just a thought passing through saying, you're no good. And no reality more than that. That's the wisdom view. The reality is a thought is passing by, one of a million, which carries with it a story that creates pain. That's all. Simi mentioned another couple last night. I need to get on in life. For that I need ambition and desire, and I need to push and struggle. It's a view of life. It's a very dualistic view. it's giving a certain, it's a certain kind of knowing. This is what life is. Life is a battleground. I, me, and life there need, I need to fight to get on. I need ambition, energy, and struggle to succeed. So dualistic thinking or ordinary thinking creating quite a painful result in life. Whereas the wisdom view would tend to say, life is just happening, life is unfolding, and I will watch this life unfolding by itself, and in a natural, spontaneous way, I will align myself with what is right. I will just go with what is right. It's a much bigger, freer view, and will be just as successful. Successful, depending on how you define successful. This pain in my back is really bad. I must stop it. I come to retreat to stop the pain. It is working, it's not working. I need to take Acomol. It's a real problem for me. And I'm taking pills, and I have to do something about it. It's dualistic. Me, here, the pain, here. I am against it. I want to shut it up. I want to stop it, struggle, and a very closed view between me here as a person and a phenomena there as a thing called pain, and the battle between the two. Whereas a wisdom view of that would say, there are pain sensations. Why do they need to be the most interesting thing in the universe? The universe is enormous out there. My back pain has to be the most important thing in the universe, in the cosmos. That's the wisdom view. Another one, a little bit of challenge to the Datiyim here. Dualistic view would say, I am here, ordinary human being, schlepping along. God is there. The best I can do is worship God somewhere up there, and hopefully I'll have a better life. Ordinary thinking, very dualistic, making separation between the divine and the person. The wisdom view would go somewhere else. Now, I don't want to get into this too much because it's a bit explosive. And if you know, Buddha Dharma has been called atheistic, meaning not believing in God. Indeed, it doesn't believe in God. But it encourages you to hold the wisdom view of the divine. And that's a whole different story. So in some sense, the Buddha Dharma is extremely interested and is only interested in God, but more in Elohut, or in the divinity, or the divine experience, not in a duality of God there and the human being here. So the wisdom view would say, so where is then, tell me where God is not. Where is no God? I want to know. God is up there, human here. Where is no God? Divinity is beyond time, space. It's right there in the middle of the wisdom view. It's the essence of the wisdom view is the sense of divinity, or Elohut, or sacred. But not dualistic, not separating. Right here, in everything, in the reality itself. So we practice the Buddha Dharma by three basic compartments, okay? Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Sila, perhaps a bit limited, that we just talked about it for 5 minutes at the beginning of the retreat. Sila is ethical behavior, but it's not really ethical behavior, it's much more than that. It's practice of relationship with the world, which is beneficial relationship, not harming, not taking, being simple, being kind to ourselves and the world. So sila is a very big thing. It's not just an ethical laws like the Ten Commandments, Asara Dibrot. It's about a beneficial relationship between us and the world. And that's a very big part of the practice, but here, especially in the West and with Vipassana retreats, we don't really emphasize it so much, but it's definitely there. It's between and under everything you're eating. The food you eat is given to you with sila, meaning with a sense of beneficial relationship and giving and serving and connecting. So it's there, written into things that we do, but we don't make a big story out of it. And that's mostly because it's a meditation retreat and we want to sit and practice meditation. And that's the agenda, and that's fine. But I'm just mentioning, in other places like in the East, sila takes a much bigger part of the practice. Right, you can spend years on sila and before you start on the next, samadhi. Samadhi meaning practice, meditation practice. Now sila, we mentioned at the beginning and I mentioned it just now, samadhi is what we've been doing all this time. It's practice on purification of the mind, cleaning the mind of its stuff. And the third is panya, and panya is wisdom. And that's really the subject of tonight's talk. Wisdom, another kind of knowing. So, panya, or wisdom, is like chokhmah, but chokhmah, I would say, in the Kabbalistic terms, or in the ancient view of chokhmah, something transcendental. So panya is more like the original sense of chokhmah. It's non-rational, it's non-dualistic, it doesn't separate things from each other, it tends to emphasize the interconnection of things with each other. It is freeing, it is the wisdom that frees us. It is not a neutral kind of academic knowing. It's a wisdom that frees. It does something to the consciousness. So it's an engine that drives liberation. Not just chokhmah, which is kind of nice to have. It does something. So it's all of these elements in panya, wisdom. It's beyond convention. It is not conventional knowing. It is not the consensus that exists in the society about what is truth. It is not there, what people regard as being a fact. Uvda. It is not about facts. It is also about loving, and is much more like in the Bible it says the Daat is knowing and loving, is even sexual loving is in the word Daat. So it's loving too. Knowing in Panya is with the heart and the mind, because the mind will tend to chop things into pieces and the heart tends to collect everything together. So mind and heart together, it's that kind of knowing. It isn't owned by anybody. It's really an interesting point. Chokhmah, panya, can't be said to be owned. It's not my panya or chokhmah that I can have. It doesn't belong to anybody. So another way of describing it is vidya, or this is the same word in Sanskrit as knowing. It's also come into Hebrew as the same word, yeda. Or, and knowing vidya in the Tibetan Rigpa, it's the quality of knowing which you apply. It's, I won't go into the fine delicate differences here. Panya is sort of very broad, is what we discover called chokhmah. Vidya is kind of the way we do it. And avidya is ignorance. So our path is from avidya, not knowing, or ignorance, to vidya, knowing. And gradually, over time, increasing our wisdom eye. The difference, it's quite dramatic, the difference it can be between the wisdom eye, panya, and ordinary knowing. I've got a quote here from Krishnamurti. He says, "There is no path to truth, and there are not two truths. Truth is not of the past or of the present. It is timeless. Truth is a state of being which arises when the mind, which seeks to divide, to be exclusive, which can think only in terms of results, of achieving things, has come to an end." I'm reading it because of that, this last words. Krishnamurti is saying, truth is when the mind comes to an end, when the mind is finished. What does that mean? I mean, that's crazy. In a sense, that's crazy. But if you understand, when he says mind, he means conventional mind. He means dualistic mind. The mind which achieves, which wants results, which divides me from the world, which wants to get things, which wants to have things, which wants to change things, which that mind stops. And that mind can, yes, come to an end. You can see things totally differently. We suffer because we are in a dualistic avidya, not knowing mind. The ignorance leads to suffering. That's a fundamental, if you like, Buddhist law. It's the fundamental beginning of the whole process of transformation, is to understand that suffering comes from ignorance. If you like, it's the basic formula of Buddha Dharma. Suffering is natural result of ignorance. And you know, on the very, very simplest level, suffering can only happen if there's a sufferer. So if there's no sufferer, meaning me here and the pain here, then there's no suffering. The dualistic view is the creation of suffering. The construction of a world, me and the world, creation of suffering. It's inevitable. We construct a world, we believe in the construction, we believe that we are like this or like that, that we are miserable or we are a victim or we want this or we need that and it's not happening and life is like that, and like we construct our world. We believe in it, then we live in it, the construction, and then we cry. We forget that we made the construction and we can unconstruct it, deconstruct it. When we're inside that construction, we get a feeling that life is just an automat from birth to death. All I'm doing is functioning, is doing, is working, is having children, is getting them to school in the morning, is parnasa, is arguing with, you know, fighting, milchamot. That's life, and then it's over. That's the construction. That's the sense of automatic living, when we feel we're living in a constructed world. That's what's called samsara. Samsara, a word means the wheel. It's the wheel going round. It's the sense of things going round and round and round, and this automatic living. Here I am on the wheel, just going round and round and round. Kind of frightening, in a way, image of the wheel of samsara. And it's difficult for us because in the wheel of samsara, we are always subject to conditions. We're always struggling with conditions because we set up a construction of me and life there, and then we have to fight it. All conditions, like I was saying before, are a problem for us. We are dependent on this, dependent on that. That's got to be right. We want love, we want money, we want food, we want health, we want pleasure, we want it, you know, we're on the wheel. And it's hard to believe it, but we put ourselves there. So the good news is that we do have the wisdom eye inside every one of us. When we go, this retreat would be impossible without it. We would simply not be able to sit and explore our life together in the way we're doing it, with these wonderful quiet sittings at 6:15 in the morning, where you can, you know, you could hear a pin drop. The silence is so beautiful. We couldn't do that without a wisdom eye already in us. And it's in us as a child. It's in our search. It's in the longing. Kameha. We long. We long for liberation. Where does that longing come from? If we didn't have the wisdom eye in us already, we wouldn't long. We wouldn't know what to long for. There's nothing to long for. We would be entirely in the construction. We would just be an automat, a machine. We're not a machine. We have it in us. We have intuition. We have a sense of freedom. We have an understanding. It's in everything. It's in the mythology. It's in the books. It's in the it's there, all like, written everywhere. I really like the image of Gan Eden and Girush, the Garden of Eden, and the being thrown out. It's such a it's a powerful image of this. Original man, eight, meaning internalized, inside, the fruit of the tree, of that, of knowing, Tov V'Ra, means knowing, in the knowing is Tov V'Ra, means the tree of Tov V'Ra is fundamentally dualistic tree. Tree of good for me, bad for me, tovli rali, tovli rali, and I eat it, I take it in. And an interesting image of, and I then find myself out of the Gan Eden. And I chose it rather than the tree of life. Once I'm out of the Gan Eden, very hard to get back in, because there's a guardian, and that's the Cherev. Which is, what is it, metapechet, right? That's the dualistic sword. It's dualism again, upside down, up and down. So the gates of the Garden of Eden are really closed as long as we have dualistic thinking. But there's the tree of life. And the tree of life is not dualistic, it's just life. And when we have a perspective, a point of view of life, and not a point of view of Tovli Rali, we'll find ourselves back inside. The tree of life is not personal. It's not me. The minute I say, I want the tree of life, we lost it. Again we're in dualism. Again we're out of the Gan Eden. Tree of life is not personal. It's taking a point of view of life. We have to, in a way, die a bit to live. We have to die to being a separate me that wants things in order to live, in order to find ourselves back with the tree of life. So just the fact that these stories, these mythologies are so with us, shows that the experience is also with us. We have it in us. So the route, or the direction, or the journey, that image came to me of, because I'm so much with small children this time in my life, of a argaz chol, a sandbox. So first of all, we play in the sandbox, and we think that the sandbox, like children do sometimes, that's the whole world. There's nowhere outside the sandbox. And that's, in a way, our samsara. And we don't know we're in it. We just play inside the box. It's like being in prison and just spending our time rearranging the furniture to be a bit more comfortable. And the first thing that happens then is we feel unsatisfied, dissatisfaction, something is wrong, something is missing. And we say, wait a minute, I'm bounded, there are walls. And we realize we're in the box. There is walls to the box. And I want to be free. And one of the places that we feel that is that when we know we don't know, that there's something stopping us, we know we don't know. That's already a kind of a good step forward. And many of you are struggling with that. We know our limits. We know, okay, fine, but we're meeting a limit. Maybe the limit is, I can't deal with these thoughts that keep coming again and again, the narratives that I don't like, that keep coming on and on and on, I can't deal with them, they just keep going. Okay, fine, that's meeting the walls of the box. The next stage is working with this knowing, wanting to release, wanting, you know, looking at the walls, looking at how we are, looking at that weirdness, knowing we're in a sandbox, examining the sandbox, examining the walls, seeing that they are walls, and slowly we realize that the door is open, that there isn't, the walls are not prisoning us at all. And when we realize the door is open and we go out, we realize we made the box. It's actually us. It's not that someone put us in the box. We put ourselves in it, and we have the power to be free of it, to go out. Just like my chickens. I always like this image, because I have chickens, and I feed them every morning, and I never shut the door behind me. The door of the chickens are wide open. Every morning I come in with a bit of food for them. The door is wide open, they never go out. They don't know it's a door. No one told them there's a door. Outside is the most fantastic food. There are worms, and there is insects, and there is ants, and so on. They have no knowledge. And when one goes out by accident, because it's very busy running, it suddenly finds itself outside. It goes, I'm outside. It tries desperately to get back in again. So we experience here, experiences bringing us on the path from dualistic knowing, ordinary knowing, limited knowing, to panya, unlimited knowing, or non-dual knowing. And there are many, many ways in which we go on this journey and we discover things, and we are doing it here. One of the ways, and all of us teachers here have been talking about, maybe talking too much about different ways, but one of them, for example, is to realize the dynamic nature of what we previously thought was fixed and closed, or solid. The dynamic nature, for example, of a pain, or the dynamic nature of a breath, which we didn't pay attention to all our life. We thought, it's just a breath. It's just obviously it's a breath, and it has no interest. And a breath, I know what a breath is. It's in, out, ba, ba, ba. That's what it is. But when we look at a breath properly, we see it's a whole world, and it's dynamic. There's no two breaths the same. It's not only dynamic, it has mind and body in it. We can influence it. It influences us. It tells us about ourselves. It has a quality. I am in relationship to it. So it's opening another kind of a whole world that was closed, or was minimal, or was sort of a formula called breathing. And we see the dynamic nature of things, the dynamic nature of the flow of life in our bodies. It's beautiful. The dynamic nature of gravitatia, that is holding me on the ground. It's a pressure. I feel pressure. I feel weight. It's new. It's interesting. It's not mine, not my gravity. Something is holding me on the ground. Let me discover what it's like to be held on the ground by gravity. What's it like for the ground to hold me from underneath and support me? These are opening things that are closed by just investigating, exploring, using our awareness to unpack, to open, to look. And this way, non-intellectual, not more dualistic thinking, oh, I better read a book on gravitatia and find out what the scientists say about gravity. They don't know anyway what is gravitation. I sometimes give this story because it just touched me, and it gives an example and of a woman that was in a class of mine some years ago. And I'm giving it as an example, not because it's dramatic, but because it's not at all dramatic. It's very, very small, but it gives a sense of what I'm talking about. There's a woman, an older woman, who was in one of my classes, and she was sitting every week, like 6-7 meetings, and then one evening, in the middle of the meditation, she just burst into tears. In floods of tears. And so at the end of the meditation, everyone said, what happened, what happened, what happened, why are you crying? And she said, you don't realize, I'm 55 years old, I have four or five children, I think she said, at home, and I have constant pain in my hips, and I have nothing to do with it. I can't do anything with it. I've taken pills for 5-6 years, and it's constant for me. And I was sitting in meditation, and I began to turn my attention to the pain in my hips. And all of a sudden, when I turned my attention to the pain, it actually started to go and come back and go and come back, and it wasn't the same, and then it turned something else, it changed. And all of a sudden, I found that I could actually take power. I had power to influence my body, which I never thought I had. Because all my life I've been a victim. I've just done what people told me. I've done what the doctors told me. I've done what my children told me. I am a servant at home making food, serving everybody. My husband is no help. I'm serving him as well. I'm just a slave. And I thought that that's what I'm meant to do. And all of a sudden, I found I'm not a victim anymore, because just that understanding that I can change my pain. And that was what made me cry. Not the experience of the pain, but the fact that I felt empowered because I could change my pain, myself. So just a small example, but it gives a sense of the dynamic nature of reality, which if we understand it is part of the journey from the ordinary mind to the wisdom mind. When we're talking about wisdom mind, we're talking about something that is beyond boundaries. The wisdom mind doesn't really recognize boundaries. Boundaries of being dualistic. I am here, the world there is a boundary. I am here, the tree is there, is also a boundary. Boundaries are not real. They are constructions of the dualistic mind. We have a boundary called a border, border of Israel. We all know this border. It's completely clear. We all know we Israelis. I'm not sure, but you know. I'm a bit of everything. I'm more English than Israeli. But anyway, we have a boundary of Israel or of England. You go up in a satellite and you look at the planet, where's the boundary? It doesn't exist. There's no boundary of Israel on the planet. There's no line drawn anywhere. It's a construction. Just a small example. When you look at it from down here and in our mind, of course it's absolutely clear boundary with all the maps and everyone knows it, and if you go across it you get killed by somebody in it. But where is it? So just a small example. Boundaries exist because we create them. When we walk with the grass under our feet, the tree in front of us, the bird singing in the sky somewhere, we feel the earth under our feet and the sky above. So where is the boundary of me and the world exactly? Where is the world different from me? Where are we separate and where are we together? It's a question. It's no longer quite so simple as I'm here and then and the world is there. It's not so simple. We get a sense that we are less the center of everything. We are less of a center. And instead, there is a flow of interrelations, interconnection. A flow of relationship that's flowing between us and everything else. If we see that, and even more, if we live it in our life, this is a radical transformation. It brings us to the wisdom mind right there. We are in, the wisdom mind shows us constant interrelationship, constant flow, that there isn't anything that really divides us from the world. Okay, we have a skin. But the skin is not so sure that the skin is really a boundary. Yeah, I've got a skin, but what's here? What's above the skin? I don't know. The boundaries of me and the world are more of those constructions. We sometimes feel there's something missing in our life. There is. We are missing. We're missing to be fully there with the life. We're missing our connection to life. We need to reconnect directly. Come down off our sort of special status of me and see how we're connected to everything, taking the pressure off being somebody and feeling the direct interconnection with the oxygen that we breathe, with the grass under the feet, with the birds outside, all direct knowing, not thinking about the birds, not thinking about the, you know, imagine we're doing the washing up in the kitchen, we're here. We can be thinking about, oh, it's so boring, I have to do the washing up, and I need to go and read a very important spiritual book about Buddhism, and I have to do the washing up. Or we can be anxious, I should be doing something else, or it's taking too much time, or why is the taps not working, or we could be doing all, or we could be in interrelation with the experience, the water, the touch of the plates, the movement of our hands, the sense of the space around, that me standing on the earth, 2 feet on the ground, the birds outside maybe, or other people with me, the sense of, you know, on and on and on, a whole cosmos is right there with me washing up, which we're not going to notice if we're busy thinking, I have to go off and read a book, and why am I doing the washing up, it's so boring and taking so long. So the good news about Panya is not only that we have a bit of it already and that it's inviting us to develop, to be developed, but that it's not all or nothing. In other words, it's not, there's sometimes a view that we're down here, we're down here, we're down here, and we have to kind of work to reach nirvana there. And it happens instantly by this cosmic kind of bang, and we are in nirvana. So let's forget about nirvana and just talk about the wisdom eye, because the wisdom eye is something growing and growing in us, and a little bit of that wisdom eye goes a long way. It changes things for us quite radically. It makes us less self-centered. It gives us a taste of the tree of life instead of the tree of Tovara. We don't need to go all the way. We can experience it in the retreat. We just let go. We surrender and touch the ground and feel the air and be under the sky, and even watch our thoughts passing by as part of the cosmos. We're already there. We're experiencing it. The only thing is to do it more and more and more and more. So gradually it becomes the way we live. And then we live with wisdom rather than living in a very, in the agaz chol, rather closed. So, but we don't have to think that we have to be all the way or nothing. That we'd have to do 100 retreats and only then. It changes our life bit by bit. A little bit goes a long way. So we need to have trust. We trust in ourselves. We trust that we do have the ability. We trust that it's there in the reality. It's not something that... It's the way reality is. We're aligning ourselves with reality. It's not the... dualistic mind is not in reality, but the wisdom mind is in reality. It's about reality. The panya is there in the earth and the trees. It's the dualistic mind that's the problem. The tree is very unhappy with us giving it a label and calling it a tree and saying you're there, and maybe I cut you down because I want to use you. The tree is very unhappy, but the tree is very happy with the wisdom eye, because it's inclusive. It includes the tree and me all in one place. It's the life perspective. Life is very happy with the life perspective. If we look at the world from the perspective of life and not the perspective of me, life is enjoying that very much, because it's reality there. The interaction has to be. Then there cannot be boundaries written into the reality. It's only into our minds. So the wisdom interconnecting mind, the holistic view, is aligning ourselves with reality, so it invites us to join it. And what's standing against it is all our conditioning and the ignorance, creating constructions, sankharas, that we've been busy with all the life. So slowly, slowly we surrender that, we drop that, we have the trust that the wisdom eye will grow in us. It's already in us, and it's already in life. We just need to give it space, give it room, give it attention, use our consciousness, pure consciousness, and just be in it. That's it. Thank you. It will take a couple of minutes to sit. Yeah.